You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
My name is Cade Courtley, and this is Can You Survive This Podcast. This show is designed to teach you techniques that will increase your chances of survival in any life-threatening disaster scenario imaginable. Join me each week as I challenge my guests to see if they have what it takes to get out alive. Knowledge is power, people. Can you survive this podcast? Hello, my fellow survivors. If you can hear my voice, then it means you are still alive, and it remains my mission to keep it that way. I'm Cade Courtley, and welcome to another episode of Can You Survive This Podcast? All right, folks, amazing guest today. This guy has basically been in over 30 feature films and some of the biggest TV shows out there that include CSI New York, you were in Narcos with Netflix, I believe, and Justified, and currently are playing in CBS's SEAL teams. I want everybody to welcome AJ Buckley. Welcome to the show. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm so happy to be here. I love these type of podcasts. I love this shit. This is so rad. It's like Naked and Afraid, but better. You know what I mean? It's like I realize, especially with this pandemic when it started, how incapable you are in certain situations. You forget. Like, it reminds you of like what a pussy you are. I'm like, oh fuck. Like, geez, I can't. How do you survive certain things? How do you get out? So, but I love these type of things, man. I'm so fucking happy to be here.
Well, I really appreciate your time. I know you got a full plate, but thank you so much for taking some time with us. Well, let's get right into that then. What would you have done different to prepare for the pandemic that we are in right now if you could have done something different?
Stop drinking way earlier.
Well, you know what they say about the pandemic, right? You're either going to be a chunk, a drunk, or a monk. So I hear you. A lot of people that have been keeping the liquor stores in business.
Yeah. I mean, no, honestly, it really is like, I feel like I can handle myself. And you always feel like you've got it under control until something like this happens. And then it's like, then take things out of your control. Like for us, we moved. We moved on March 15th because our plan was we're downsizing from where we lived. We're moving to Redondo, and then we were going to go to Nashville and stay in Nashville for a bit and find out where we wanted to live and buy property in Nashville and be based out of there. And then I would come back here and shoot the show here. So on March 15th, pandemic happens. The show shuts down. The kids are all sent home from school. I have twin boys who are two, and they're fucking maniacs, like absolute maniacs. They wake up, and it's like fucking Tasmanian devils. They grab, throw shit, and they're laughing. They're great. It's a great time, but everything in their path is just destructive. And then I have my six-year-old daughter, who I never experienced this. Like, my daughter would go to bed. She would just like play with her Barbie. She was so calm. Boys are just like, I mean, I understand what I now. I've actually apologized to my mom so many times. I'm like, was I like this? And she was like, yep, you were. And now you have twins, and she's like, it's, yeah.
There you go. So you're getting a little payback right now.
Huh? Yeah. But we literally showed up, and like the day that we got here, we couldn't get cable, couldn't get internet. No one was coming to the houses. Everything we had kind of set up, even like delivery of like furniture and all these things. So we were kind of like fucked. And God bless my wife, because I will say that one of the best things of this pandemic is how close my wife and I got. Because I say this gratefully, I'm working all the time. So with the show, it's a 10-month shoot, and I'm gone Monday to Friday. I'm not there. And she holds down the fort, and I don't know how the fuck she does it. And I got a real smash in your face. This is how hard it is. It's no joke for my wife and what she does. And so I had a new appreciation for that, and we had to basically be like, okay, we're not going anywhere. We're going to get through this. But in order to get through this, we need to really communicate with each other and understand where we're coming from. Otherwise, this is going to crumble. I mean, I know a bunch of friends of mine. They're like, the divorce papers have been filed. Like, they're
My buddy's a divorce lawyer. He's got work for the next decade. I mean, he's just like, wow.
So we got here, and also it was like, no cable, no nothing, and the boxes, and we're like, okay, well, we just got to get through it, and we figured it out. But I will say this, I definitely overreacted a little bit. I was like, okay, I was very proud of myself in this because everyone's talking about toilet paper. So I pulled an Audible and I went to Amazon. I bought like two bidets. And I was like, who needs fucking toilet paper when you can fucking
hell yeah
have a fucking bidet? And I got one that was like the cheap one that fucking poor guests that have to sit on that is, it's horrible.
It just felt like an enema, huh?
Literally, there's a video on my Instagram that when you hit the button, it's a fucking like it explodes and it like shot across the fucking room and like hit the thing. I was like, oh my God. I was like, if anybody does that, your ass is for sure going to be clean. But
so are your intestines, apparently.
There's going to be some bleeding. But then the other one's great. I was like, and I actually heard on Joe Rogan, it was Joe Rogan's podcast. He was like, someone told me, like, if a dog like shit on your leg, would you just use toilet paper or would you like use a hose?
Good point.
That's what he said. Joe Rogan was like, good point. So he's like, got this thing. And I just Googled the one he had. And it's like, it's a warm thing. And it's like, beep, 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 beep. And I have like a little fan on there. And I'm like, this is great, man. So the only thing it doesn't do is give me a beer or something like that. But it's pretty cool.
I think that's an option, actually. Yeah.
Can you get ones that just like you hit a button and you're like.
Yeah. Well, basically they've got one where you can go in and it gives you a cup of coffee. So then you can take a shit. And then when you're done, the beer just pops in your hand.
Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it. It just, man, come on, just sticking stuff up your ass is kind of just bizarre to begin with.
I had a coffee enema. I'm like, yeah, that's good for you, bud.
Okay, I'll take your word. Man, AJ, you're from Ireland originally, right?
Yeah,
because I'm not hearing any of it.
That means I'm sober.
No, there you go.
I was born in Dublin, Ireland, and I left Ireland when I was six. Moved to Vancouver, Canada. And if I have a few pints on me, then my accent will come up. I've talked to like my mom. I'm like, "How are you, ma?" Like, it goes in. Where are you from?
Grew up in Colorado.
So I'm sure if you get around, I don't need to Colorado.
We don't really have an accent, but I have relatives down in Texas. I'm down there for an hour or two and I'm writing just pick it up like a magnet.
Yeah, just the cadence of how it is. So where I'm from is Donnybrook, and it's a very street Dublin. It's like, how are you going? Yeah. Like, it's very like, it's got a very fast pace to it. But yeah, so the true story, when the first date I had with, the first time I met my wife was in Vegas, and I was pretty drunk and she was super hot and I got in a hot tub.
She is super hot.
She is fucking
trying to keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, she is. Like,
there you go.
I was in a suit. And I don't think I'd slept. And my buddy we had a mutual friend, Ike, and I literally had like gone from our hotel to his birthday party. And I saw this hot girl in like a yellow bikini. And I like in my suit, just walked over, shoes, everything, grabbed a beer and got into the hot tub. And sat by the side, and she's like, why are you wearing a suit in the hot tub? I'm like, why are you wearing a bikini? And that was it. And then so our second date, I don't know what bullshit I told her. I lied my ass off because I for sure thought I'd never see her again. Then on the second date, we polished off like two or three bottles of wine. We didn't eat our food. And my tell usually if I start getting a little drunk is that my Irish accent starts to come through. And she's like, is this some sort of like weird actor thing that you're doing? Because she's a nurse. And she's like totally turned off. And the more that she said, was talking about it, the more my brogue was coming through. And I was like, oh, no, love, love. And she was like, oh, God, she's like, you have to stop. And I'm like, and I couldn't. Because I was like, the more she talked about it, I was like, oh, listen, though. And she's like, oh, God. She's like, I, this is why I don't want to date actors. Like, you guys do accents and do this weird shit all the time. And I'm like, no. And then it was just so. And then she realized that I am actually a fucking leprechaun. And time to time, after a few pints, I have an accent. So anyway, that was a long-winded story to get back to here.
I love it, man. So let me ask a question. Before you started the TV show SEAL Teams, had you had any experience with SEALs before? Had you ever met any or hung out with them or any of that?
Well, I was really fortunate on CSI New York to work alongside Gary Sinise.
Sure.
And he's probably one of the greatest human beings on the planet. And I didn't realize at the time, because I wasn't approaching it from where I am now, of what he was doing for men and women coming home. Mm. And what the Gary Sinise Foundation meant and the homes that he was building. And, you know, I'd go to fundraise and stuff. And he actually sent me over to Iraq. I went up to Iraq in 2008. It was right when you guys were doing the push into Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So I flew into like Kuwait. And when I got to Kuwait, I was partnered up with a SEAL that was like my buddy. And you know, when you come from Kuwait and that fucking, this is like C-130 and that dive fucking thing that they do.
Well, you got to do a very high spiraling approach because you're still worried about anti-aircraft and stuff like that. You got to turn all the lights off. So these guys literally start high and then just toilet bowl straight down to the airfield.
yeah, this fucking guy did not. He's like, oh, you like when the plane do tricks and like stuff? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, of course, man. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm like this. And I'm like, oh, my God. Dude, I thought we were like, and then like they drop flares and do the thing as we're coming in. I'm like, land, they're laughing their balls off. But he was with me the entire time. And so I got to chat with him a bunch. But I'll never forget, we were staying at Camp Liberty. Mm-hmm. I think the general at the time was Jacoby. He was like the 3-star general there. It was a Camp Liberty, which was Saddam's house. And it like, you go in the back, there was like a band playing, and people hitting golf balls into the fucking, into the lake or whatever the fuck that yeah. thing was. And then there was like those weird, dude, it was the most eerie.
Yeah, that's some gaudy ass choices he made on his interior, huh?
Yeah. I would definitely ask for my money back from that guy. Terrible. Yeah. He was ripped off for sure. But yeah, and then we stayed there. And what was I saying?
I was just kind of curious about any pre-television series still exposure or still contact you had. What so was that like?
That was the one guy. And I chatted with him. And that was pretty much, but I didn't register at what SEAL was, or I didn't understand it. By no means, being an Irish Canadian, I didn't really shot guns before. Mm-hmm. You know, I shot a handgun, but my character on the show is considered the knuckle dragger. And there's a guy that is on set with me every day that my character is based on. And he's 6'5" and from Texas and a huge black beard and a madman who Sonny Quinn is based off of. But I remember my very first day shooting the 249, and we shot a live round. We're out in the water on the boat, but we're shooting live rounds into the water. And it was so intense. Like, I was just, that first sound of like, pop, 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 I was like, and my glove got fucking stuck. And they were too big, and I got stuck. So I couldn't get the fucking, it to stop shooting. It was like, I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, okay, relax. So like, you do again. I'm like, but my glove. And they're like, no, you're fine. Like, so they switch out the gloves. Like, I actually have it on tape. But it's, when I look at that now to where I feel like I am now, it just, and then I shot the Mach 48 for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, dude, that thing is fucking, that's as a bitch as that is to carry it. Cause all the guns that we carry, they're all the same weight and all that stuff. And even when we were doing the pilot, they like taken out our plates and put fake plates in our body armor. But then our guys like Mark Owen and the rest of them were like, they're moving too easy. Like they're not moving with labor, you know? So it's like, it looks fake. So we need to put the real stuff back on them. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, I can act like I'm like no, it's not how.
Too late. So,
I think the hardest thing too was in the pilot too, I had the night vision I had was that, you know, the moose ones, the 3-3. Dude, I'm trying to figure out the counterweight and just like it was awesome looking through it. But Jesus, man, that was a whole, like, I'm sure you've got like crazy neck muscles where you're little tiny little muscles that you didn't know existed in your body.
Well, it's kind of crazy how your body and your mind, or like with night vision, your eyes and your brain just adapt to it, to where you put it on and it's awkward. And then before you know it, you understand, oh, that's how far that is. And you start getting depth perception and then carrying all that weight. It just, you kind of just, well, you switch or you don't, and you're worthless. So yeah. And then add about 120 degrees of temperature. Yeah. You know, in like 5 days.
You know, like Scotty Fox and Mark Simos and were you in with those guys or?
No, I was a little bit before those guys. Yeah. Okay.
You look very young.
I appreciate it. I turned 50 this year. I'm doing my best.
You, really?
Yeah.
Holy fuck. You got a filter on your face right now, buddy? You got
Come on, man. This is all live stuff here.
Did you put makeup?
I'm trying.
You know what I feel like? You get powdered before we did the podcast?
No, you know what it is? I don't have kids, brother.
Oh, that's what it is, bro. There you go.
And only one ex-wife. So yeah, I think that's helped.
I've really met so many fucking great dudes.
Well, like, let me ask you this then. Without having military experience or really spending much time, you probably came into it with a certain impression, and then you start meeting and working with these guys. What surprised you the most about some of these special operators, some of these guys, once you got to know them? Was there something like, wow, I kind of thought you guys were going to be pricks, or I don't know, what misconception did you have until you got to know and work with these guys?
There was a stillness that I'd never seen before in a man. He was so calm and precise and just in the movement. And we did this one thing where, we were during the pilot and they're drilling things and we're going through this like a safe house type thing, and we'd go through it and then basically be like, you're dead. And they'd do it and they'd fucking clear, and they're like, you guys go, you step in, you're dead. But they were just like, so how they approached everything, it was like almost like I literally felt like I was around like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, it was like these guys were just so still and so direct with what they were telling you there's no bullshit in like, this is what you need to do and fucking do this and you'll complete it. You fucking like, just do this. Right. As long as you do this, you will complete it. And I remember Mark Owen saying to us, going, your 3 foot rule, like what you can control in your 3 feet. Mm-hmm. All you have is here. Everything outside that is, if you can just control this, you're fine. Don't worry about anything else. Just, and for me, that was a switch. I was like, okay, because I'm anticipating this. And then I'm like, all these other things. And it just, honestly, and there's so many things with these guys that just metaphors in life that I'm like, just control what you can control. If you just handle your shit within what you can do, the world's going to be a better place. If everybody just did their part of their 3 foot rule, we're golden.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to worrying about this and that, things that are completely out of your control. And he told me a story of like where he was doing, it was like a climb exercise, and he froze on this rock, and the guy, this French guy, I don't know if he was French, but let's call him French. I'm pretty sure he was, but he came up there and he was like, what are you panicking about? He was like, all you can do right now is focus right here. Don't worry about up, don't worry about down. And I was like, and I've taken so many lessons from these guys of emotionally, I want to fucking freak out and do that, but I'm like, okay, look, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Stay calm, and how do I adapt and overcome? Like, what happened, and not lose my shit. And I'm Irish, so I can fly off the handle sometimes. Like, all right, but it didn't do anything. It's a waste of fucking energy.
Well, you solve the problem and you don't quit.
Yeah, exactly.
And then repeat. Yeah. Solve the problem, don't quit.
Don't quit. And to me, it's like, I've never been a quitter in my life, but I've never had it laid out so simply. You know what I mean? Like, it was it's very fucking simple how these guys talk to it. It's not fucking, they're like, just do this, solve the problem, don't quit. Like you said, and you're like, oh, okay. That makes sense.
And then move on.
It's no Tony Robbins fucking like fucking long-winded fucking thing. It's just like self-home and fucking don't quit.
Well, because we're not that bright. So that's, we kind of got to break it down to something like that.
You guys are the brightest motherfuckers I've ever met. I'm like, do you know Goldie?
Is that his call sign?
Garrett Golden. I call him Goldie because Garrett Golden, he's the big Texas.
Yeah. It rings bell. Is he your boy on the show?
Yeah. Him. But the one thing that's actually really cool about the show that I'm truly incredibly proud of is that this is the very first show in television history that over 70% of our crew are veterans.
Good. Good to hear.
Mark Owen and Chris Chulak and our showrunner Spencer, Mark said, look, there's no stunt guy in Hollywood. They can't do what my guys have already done. So every one of our stunt doubles are former special operations. And we've had guys, we've had some crazy, like emotional, like we all get tears in our eyes on set. Like there'll be a guy, there's this really crazy moment in season one where this one guy, is it JSOC? JSOC. So they were talking and he was like, some of the tech advisors that were there, they started having conversations like, hold on a second. And they're going through their call signs. He goes, you're in Fallujah? And they go through this thing. And they had this conversation. And they realized that they were in a fight together and that these SEALs saved him and his unit, but he never met him in person. He's like, and they met him on our set. They like broke down.
Yeah.
It was like the most unbelievable. They'd never met in person.
It's crazy. It ends up being such a small world. That's happened to me on a number of times.
You know, on the set of the fucking show. And we're like fucking... Dude, it was the most beautiful thing. Yeah. I was like, this is so crazy. And the thing that I really take pride in is that Chris Chulak, honestly, he was the one that really gave Margon his word and said, look, yes, it's network, but I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that the authenticity, it's a television show, today, but we're going to try and keep it as authentic as possible. And we're going to tell your stories through your lens as authentic as possible. And not cheapen that as much as you can. At the end of the day, it's a CBS show.
Yeah. So
I promise you that it won't be like rah-rah America and fucking there's no issues with anybody. We're going to go deep into the TBI and PTSD and all these other things. And when you see CBS rally behind the show and to give the reverence that these guys have, when a tech advisor's on set on another show, other shows that are done, they're just tech advisors. On our show, they have the ability on any guest director to call cut and tell them that they're doing it wrong.
See that? That's so good to hear because let's just say that's the minority as far as I get there's Hollywood entertainment, there's military, but when somebody goes the extra mile to try and make it realistic, it's awesome. I had an opposite experience. I was a tech advisor on a major film and Vin Diesel looks over at me. He's like, hey, Kate, is that right? And I was like, no, that's not right. And the director's like, okay, cut. Great. Now we're going into fucking rewrites. Come here, Kate. I'm like, All right. Yeah. I understand my role now here on this project. To hear what you're saying is awesome.
You know, we had this one director show up and he like did some things. And Tyler, you know Tyler Gray?
That rings a bell.
He's Delta. So Dan Briggs and Tyler were Delta, which is always so funny. Tyler's actually now become a regular cast member. And so the ball breaking that goes fucking, he's playing a SEAL.
Nonstop.
It's literally like the tech advisor's like, hey man, your gun's wrong, but your movement is fucking off, buddy. Like they're like, he's like, fuck you, pal. Like it's always like between those, you have your army and fucking, you got, they're like, right. And it's the smallest little thing, but they'll literally be like, hey, just want to let you know, like, that's wrong. It's like, that's not how we do it. It's a SEAL team. It's not fucking Delta Force. Okay. It's just like it's a constant ball breaking thing. But what we're saying,
we'll just talk about the tech advisor and how you guys on this project are going the extra mile to make it right.
And so this one director, Hilly, was like, yeah, we're going to do this. And Tyler was like, okay. And he had put the camera over here. And this is prior to, this is season one. But Tyler and every director coming in like, hey, when the tech advisor is saying, you listen to these guys, these are the real deal guys. And we do it. And with our show too, you never see the POV of the bad guy. It's always through our POV. So there's only so much movement that you can do, but it's through our eyes. And Tyler's like, well, I just think we go, and I'll never forget this. It was like fucking nails on a chalkboard. The guy goes, he saw Tyler do something. He goes, but listen, man, this is a TV show. I want to make it look cool. Okay. He's like, that's not cool. I don't think he realized like who he was talking to. And then like three other tech advisors are like, what do you mean it's not cool? He's like, well, he's like, one of the guys was like, we're not making the A team here. He goes, we're going to shoot it this way. And Tyler was like, we're going to shoot it this way. And this is how we're going to move it. And Chulak, I think, happened to be there. He's like, yep. He's like, just listen to those guys. So they can basically, they outrank the director.
Good.
One of the best things about Tyler, there's a bunch of things that's amazing about Tyler, but Tyler actually had never directed anything in his life. He's a storyteller. He studied film just because he had nothing other to do when he was deployed just to watch movies. So he understands beats. And he was the very first vet that is not in the DGA, has never directed a goddamn thing in his life. Not one. And he got to direct a fucking episode last year and he fucking crushed it. And he's getting to direct another episode this coming season as well. So it's like, it's for shit like that for these guys now that have this, like Tyler's, Mike Simos is a fucking producer, a writer. Tyler's now a director, producer, tech advisor. All these other guys have gotten these really badass jobs and all of their boys come, like guys will literally be coming back. They're like, oh, such and such. And she's coming in. They're like, oh, we're casting this guy. It just, everyone looks out for each other. It's so fucking cool.
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of stuff that's very similar between planning and executing an op in the SEAL teams. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Who are you going to use? How are you going to do it? Movement here and there. A lot of similarities to trying to shoot a show in a lot of ways. So that's really good that these guys are getting an opportunity. Did you enjoy the pre-production and continued training?
I do, man. And I felt like at the end of this season.
Is it clicking? You're like, okay, I'm getting it. I'm getting it.
I did something and I was going into rooms and like I naturally was doing but it was like three
you don't years. See what you're doing right now, but you're already right there just explaining the story. It's a muscle memory now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a muscle. And like I said, I'd never really shot a gun before, but going in and then understanding like even as simple as like Last Man, like those things and just the different like and keep your gun up. You just all these different things when we're fucking running a gun. And because it was like, go back to like when you'd see the guys do it, like when you see like someone like yourself do it, you're like, fuck, okay. 30 things are happening that you're doing in fucking 10 steps.
Yeah, but that's hours and hours and hours of training. So yeah,
it's just like, but it was honestly at the end of this season when we were up in Big Bear, I think we were filming.
Oh, it's beautiful up there.
And there was a couple of things that I done and my guy, Chase, who's my stunt double, he goes, dude, because he always, I'm like, be honest with me and call me out on everything and be blunt because I want to fucking, I drive myself nuts because I get mad when I fucking, and I'll literally be like, I'm not going to do that. And then I fucking, they say action and I fucking do it. I'm like, fuck. And I'll literally be like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not action. I'm like, God, I'm fucking, whatever it is, right? Whatever the, and then once you, it's in your mind then you can't, so, and listen, this is fucking, there's no one's firing at us. This is all fake. So I have no, I always say that all the guys, I'm like, how the fuck, like, and just stay calm. And the fact that the shit that goes down, that you're able to keep your heart rate down and fucking stay focused and communicate and do this. And it's fake. I'm doing it fake and I'm fucking panicking. Like the first, I'll never forget when we did our first breach.
Yeah.
I forgot to open my mouth and we're in a soundstage.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. I was like, oh, dude, my bell was rung so fucking bad.
Yeah, you feel like you just got punched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always just, whoa. And but I learned my lesson quick. I never did that mistake again. I was like.
Yeah, you kind of want to keep those eardrums working.
Yeah, yeah. That was intense, man.
So, AJ, did you go all in and start chewing Copenhagen?
I didn't, but I did go pretty. I mean, it's so crazy. Like, I'd never listened to – I always liked country music. And my buddy Max, who plays Clay on the show, he's become one of my dearest friends. He's like the real – like, he hunts, he guns, he's – you know, who his character is, that's who he is. But the word is oaky. He's oaky. But he, like, driving to work every day because I'm a horrible nighttime driver. I tend to fall asleep. So Max is, like, educating me on, like, country music and this. And country music, being from Ireland, is very much like Irish music. There's a story and there's, like, things. And I was like, oh, fucking. I started getting into all these different country music. So Max 100% helped me with who Sonny was and just the idiosyncrasies of being country, but it is definitely funny. When I went to, there's a foundation that I work with closely, the Boot Campaign, and they're based at Dallas. And I went there, and I'll never forget this day. The guy that was hosting it, he said, when I met him, he's like, "Love the show, man. Love the show." I'm like, "Thank you so much." He goes, "Where are you from?" I was like, "I'm Irish." He goes, "You're not from Texas?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "What in the hell?" He goes, "Martha." And he goes, "Martha." I'm like, "Hey, Martha." He's like, "Hey, I'm from Texas." I'm like, "Oh, fuck." He's like, "You're playing Texas on TV? You're not from Texas?" I'm like, "No.
Yeah, I'm an actor, sir.
I'm from Ireland." And then later on that night, they're like, "Okay, in order for you to be a Texan, you need to drink with us tonight." I'm like, "Okay, I'm Irish, so no problem. I'll happily do that." And it ended up like we're in the back of like one of those UTV things, like throwing like glow in the dark spray cans with shotguns, fucking with a bottle of fucking whatever whiskey. I'm like, "Oh my God."
Yeah, guns and moonshine. That's always a good combo.
I almost missed my flight. I was like, "Oh my God, the sun's coming up." I'm like, "My flight's at 7. They're like, "Oh fuck." I'm like, "You're a Texan now." I'm like, "All right."
Well, AJ, they'll be telling that story for decades, buddy. So you made their day. Definitely. I was going to ask you about, so you've learned all these new skills over the past several seasons.
Yeah.
How many times have you wanted to use those in situations like, "Oh man, I could totally go clear that guy's house. I could rip him out of his car."
You know what's so funny is because
there's kind of a responsibility that comes with that skill set.
The mental stuff, like how you go like, "Oh, I could," like that was my internal dialogue going, "Oh, I could do this," or like if somebody comes up to here, and it's not that I'm a pussy at the end of the day. Like that ability to switch and just stay calm and like clock everything, that's editing, right? But to, as you were saying that, the internal monologue, and it happens all the time. I'll be sitting at a light and I'll start going like, "Okay, this is going on here." If someone's like, I start talking to myself, I'm like, "This goes here, then there." But under pressure, could I perform? Could I step up? I don't know. I've never had that.
You know what's so cool about what you're just talking about? And I'm sure you've heard this on set a ton of times. Situational awareness. You were in a situation. Now you're assessing things. You're in your car. When you sit down at a restaurant, do you have your back to the wall and looking at? See, this is stuff now that.
Where's the hinges are on the door? You know, and every time I go in, it's like, I started going like, because that was the biggest thing, like where the hinges are in the door. Okay, well, that's just how it's going to open. So that's how do you come into that room? It's like, but now I'll be like sitting there. I'm like, especially if I smoke a little bit of weed, I'll be like, "Okay." So I'm like, I wander around, like, "All right, so." off of my thing. And even with my, what's been great though, with my daughter who's 6, now I'm always saying to her, like, situation, I'm like, "Remember, like, what I've taken on a bike ride?" I'm like, "Hey, look around where you're at. Okay. Like, take picture things. If you ever get lost or something ever happens, these are the things you need to, like, you need to find." It's like Liam Neeson, he's like, and Taken, when he's talking to his daughter, he's like, tell me where you are. And he's like, "What are you looking at?" I felt like Liam Neeson to my daughter about an hour and a half ago when I was taking for ice cream. I was like, "Okay, now you remember the street here? And there's a one of those, like, you know, the car sales things, the inflatable things that get like, woo, woo, woo." I'm like, "You see that? Okay, that's where the, if you see that, then the ocean's there, things there." But it was like all those different things that I feel like is now kind of things that I'll start to do.
No, it's real world skills. And it's so awesome. I learned it in the military. You learned it on the set of a show, and you're teaching your kids I wish more people were doing this. I mean, we're living in a very dangerous place right now. And these are the kind of skills that are going to keep you alive. So keep passing it down.
I had a conversation with my daughter when we were out, and I was just like, because they were talking about, they just announced like school's not going back or something, like some crazy bullshit shit. I was like, listen, Will, you'll remember this moment in your life. It's going to pass and you'll have your friends again. You'll have the school. But I'm like, this is such a fucking crazy time. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you I'm terrified. I don't know what's happening. Like I don't know what's going on. It's so nuts. But I was like, this, you just need to know where you are at all times and how to get home. And if shit goes down, these are the things that the steps that we need to do if stuff starts to go down, where we go in the house. Because when the riots and stuff were happening, I live across from the police station. And I was like, well, what are we going to do? You know, do we leave? Do we? And it was pretty scary. And I was like, okay. And I told my kids, I'm like, if for some reason anything happens, this is the things that we're going to do. 2020 literally can go fuck itself.
Like, man, it can twice.
I'd say three times.
Go seriously, man.
Eat a bag of dicks 2020.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like
you have been hanging out with team guys. Have you been called a fuck stick yet? That's a a classic.
Yeah, you know, Cash. You know,
sure, right here.
Yeah,
we went through buds together.
Dude, he's fucking hysterical, dude.
Yeah, he's a trip, isn't he?
He's so fucking fun. I did a push up challenge with him, but this is actually a funny story. So, prior to getting SEAL Team, the show I loved was The Selection.
Yeah,
fucking loved that show. And then Tyler was on that show, and Bert from Bison Union, right? Bert, who's friends with like Matt Best, or is it Matt from Black Rifle?
Yeah.
So all those guys did it. So on the show, they seemed like just terrifying. And that one kid that fucking missed his burpees like by one, and he literally, the way, because he's so intense, he was like, one thing I said was do not lie. And I was asking him, like, I'm like, dude, how hard was it not to fucking break? He's like, it was pretty hard. Like, the kid was literally shaking, and he had to, like, this kid had to go, like, run back up the hill. I don't know. It was, when I met these guys, I was like, holy fuck, Tyler, you're from The Selection. I'm like, fucking, these guys are from The Selection. Like, the way that they were so terrifying. And then when you meet them in real life, I'm like, you guys are just fucking with these people. They're slapping balls off the entire time, just breaking these guys down and fucking laughing their balls off. I'm like, it was the best. It was like, yeah. And Bert too, like Bert is the funniest and the gentlest guy in the world. And his stare when they bring him into the interrogation room, he was like, I'm like, oh fuck. And he's not that guy at all. I'm like, you motherfuckers, that's some good acting right there. That was good fucking acting.
It's kind of really, to a large extent, it is when you're in an instructor role. I did that my last year, and yeah, you click it on and then you click it off. The guys who can't click it off, that's kind of a problem, but they're few and far in between.
Yeah. Did you work with Mikey from Forged? He has that clothing company, Forged.
I know who he is. We worked together briefly overseas with the agency before he started that.
Another great dude.
Yep. Good people all around, man.
I literally have not met, other than you, you're the only asshole I've met.
and the day is still young.
No, but honestly, it's fuck just stick. Like, yeah, fuck stick. Yeah, I get that all the time. Yeah. Shit bag, fuck stick. They call me Soup Sandwich on set.
That's a good one. Yeah.
They call me Soup because I fucking forget things. So like I'm kind of a bit aloof, if you can't tell already. I kind of bounce up. I have ADD and a bunch of other things. Pretty sure you picked up on that already. And I tend to live my own little world. And they will just look at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I'm like, what? I'm in my world, there's a lot of rainbows and I'm a pretty happy fucking guy. And fucking chocolate and leprechauns, and they all exist there. It's like, they're like, what the fuck are you smiling about? I'm like, I don't know, I'm in a good mood today.
As long as you get your 3 feet right, it's all good.
The 3 feet. I'm like,
oh, 3 feet. AJ, have you ever found yourself in a life-threatening situation where you're like, man,
I wasn't at 7-Eleven when I got robbed. And I'm not going to lie, I actually did shit my pants. Like, I actually did really, like, fucking shit came out of my butthole into my pants. I don't know if that saved my life, but I didn't realize I shit my pants. It just happened.
Yeah.
But I was at a 7-Eleven and I was going in to buy He-Man cards. Remember you could get He-Man, like the stickers?
Yeah.
And fucking some
For you or your kids?
No, for me. This is like.
Oh, wait. How old were you?
I was 13 years old.
Okay.
I was 39. I was buying He-Man cards.
No, that makes sense. I thought it was like maybe a couple months ago.
Yeah, last week. No, and I remember a guy came in and I. It felt like you know, you have those dreams where you want to run,
but you can't.
You're on a sand hill and you're like telling your hand, or you're frozen and you can't breathe. It's like you're frozen. That's what happened. I remember this guy like had a gun and was yelling at this guy. And I just like, I was like, just go. And I saw this back door and I was like, run. And I just kept shitting. I basically just kept defecating on myself. Every time I was like, run, I was like, okay.
Dude, you were 13. Don't beat up on yourself too bad. I mean, fight, flight, and freeze is a trip. Yeah. We could talk about it for hours.
Yeah. When he punched the, I'll never forget, when he punched the cashier guy and the sound that it made on the guy's face, I was like, oh my God. I was like, dude. So, but I froze. I totally froze. There was no hero moment there.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, you're 13 years old and you're seeing something like that go down without any training. I wouldn't beat up on yourself about it. I talk about something I call the trigger. Mm-hmm. And so let's say you put yourself back in that situation, but today. Mm-hmm. And a trigger, the way I explain it is, okay, I'm in a life-threatening situation, like a 7-Eleven that's being held up.
Yeah.
And basically, you have to decide in a split second, I'm going to do something here. And I'm either going to live or die. And when I refer to the trigger, it's that thing that is the most important thing in your life.
Yeah.
And you think about that and then you pull the trigger. And that's when you react. And based on the next 10, 20, maybe 30 seconds, you get through that or you don't. And if you have a really strong trigger, you get through it. What do you think, if you want to share, do you think that trigger would be? I think I probably know the answer, but...
It's anything to do with my wife or my kids. It's like a different thing. I actually learned this from my dad. I'll share this story with my dad. I never told this story to anybody, well, other than my close friends, but publicly. I'll never forget this. My dad passed away 10 years ago, but this is one thing that he definitely instilled. And this would be his trigger, right? Is that my mom was his everything. My dad didn't drink. He played soccer. He laid bricks. He'd fucking forearms. Like Popeye in a barrel chested, like he was just short and stocky and awesome, happy all the time. But you say anything to my mother and you will get your fucking ass laid out. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget this. In school, I learned what fuck you, like flipping somebody off, like fuck you. I didn't know what it meant, but I just remember people just doing it in school, like fuck you, man, fuck you, fuck you. Like it was just like fuck you. It was just that's who we used. Like, oh, that's what's happening. Oh, fuck you. Like, that was it. I remember flipping people off coming home from school. I'm like, fuck you, man. People are like, fuck you too. She was like, just that's what we were doing. So I come into the house and my mom goes, you didn't clean your room before you left for school. And I don't know why I did this. I literally went like, fuck you. And my dad worked 5 jobs round the clock. I didn't think that he was there. I'm pretty sure he wasn't, but he fucking teleported from wherever the hell he was, appeared, and he fucking, it was the only time my dad ever laid hands on him. He grabbed me, he threw me against the wall, and he grabbed me by the throat, and he said, apologize to my wife. Not my mom. He's like, to my wife. I was like, excuse me? He's like, apologize to my wife. He's like, no man will ever speak to my wife like that. And he squeezed my neck so hard, and I was like, oh, he's not fucking around. Like this, I'm done. Like he was so, that was his girl. And no, didn't matter if I was son, I was done. Like, if I'm like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm like, your wife, I'm like, it's my mom. Like, and then give me one crack across the head, and that was it. Because the only time, but it was like, that was his trigger. He's like, if anybody ever said anything to my mom or to the family, he was in it. And I think I learned that from him. Like, I will 0 to 60 for me on any of that when it comes to my kids. And and sometimes I have to, like, honestly, one time when Willow was born, my daughter, and some girl was mean near the park, I was like biting my lip. I'm like, listen, man. When she wasn't looking, I'm like, you're mean. To like this other like situation. Like, you're mean. You need to get out of here. And my wife's like, AJ, like, no, you don't talk to me. And she's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, yeah. She's like, she's 6 years old. I'm like, oh yeah, get out. I'm like, dude, I was just like, she's like, relax. I'm like, okay. So that's my trigger.
Well, I tell you what, hang on to that thing. I know for a lot of actors, they'll have sort of that, this is what I do to do my job the best I can. They don't like to explain what that is. So hold on to that trigger, because I hope you don't, but if you find yourself in another situation.
What's your trigger?
I got to keep that to myself. But
oh, fair enough. When did you recognize though that you like what?
So
like, what was
I started putting together a trigger when I joined the SEAL teams, because I knew I was going to be doing a job where I was going to be asked to do stuff that was going to require running through a brick wall at 100 miles per hour, because that's what I had to do. But when I was in, I was a platoon commander, so I was in a leadership position. My trigger was my guys. Whatever it takes, get them all home. That was it. And it was very simple for me. Whatever it takes to get my guys home. And God bless, I never lost one of my guys.
Fucking nice, buddy.
So that was my trigger then. It changes, but it's a solid one. And covet that thing, man. I hope you don't need to use it, but family first, brother.
Yeah. You know, Irish and that's like how it's in my blood. It's like family and your friends are your family. You know, it's like you can choose your friends. You can't choose your family,
true.
But your friends become your family.
Yeah.
So your family unit is kind of this traveling circus, so to speak. But no, it's true though. And like, it's a work in progress. Cause it's like, how do you, I lose the ability to communicate and say step one, step two, step three. I'm like, I just, my voice makes that weird sound and like yeah. So it just, yeah. So it's a work in progress. But
well,
yeah.
I hear you. I was born patient deficient. So that's a daily challenge for me, especially with all the bullshit that's going on right now. But
yeah,
one step at a time, right?
What do you do? What's your like?
Oh man, I tell you what, if I don't get to the gym, try and get to the gym every day, forget about it. I'm a lunatic upstairs. I'll catch myself. I do something I call combat breathing. I don't know if the boys told you about this on set, but yeah. You know, you breathe in for 4 seconds, you breathe out for 4 seconds and repeat. I've had to do that almost every other day lately driving.
Yeah.
Because I guess people think now that we have COVID, there's no more rules of the road. So it's, yeah, I mean, I hear you between exercise and yeah. I guess if I was smart, I'd start doing yoga, but I have a little ADD too. So I'll be 10 minutes into yoga thinking about all the crap I should be doing instead.
Yoga is, I would say, the hardest just to get through the first thing of downward dog. I'm like, my mind's gone somewhere else.
Oh, yeah,
I'm like, I'm like, they're like, what? They're like, and then move to here. I'm like, and I'm always looking around the room. I'm like, how are you guys? I was like, literally, I put downward dog in the camera, totally focused, and I go back like this, and I'm like, okay, so then this one time, and then like I'm looking around there, I'm like, oh fuck, where are we? I'm like I just it's hard. That's a hard
getting in that zone is not easy, especially just clearing the mind. So I feel you. I do. I struggle with it as well. All right, AJ, we're gonna play a little game here. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but we do a thing on the show called Hypothetical Survival World. And okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to drop you into a survival life-threatening situation, hypothetical.
Okay.
And you're going to go through and you're going to get the chance to make a choice between A and B on 10 events. And every time you choose the right choice, you're going to get plus 10 points. If you make the wrong choice, it's minus 10 points. Are you ready for your hypothetical scenario, AJ?
Should I get a beer first or?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
I'm going to get a beer.
Yeah, okay, grab a beer, buddy.
All right.
All right, buddy.
Got my Guinness.
Dude, I like your style. If you're going to do a hypothetical survival situation, you might as well be refreshed. Mm-hmm. And hey, folks, this podcast might be brought to you by Guinness. Let's see if we can make that happen. All right. AJ Buckley.
Yes, sir.
You
let's go.
Are in a meeting discussing a future film project with top executives. You are on the 18th floor of a 30-story building when suddenly the fire alarm goes off. Now, this role that you're up for, tough guy. The execs are like, don't worry. We've been having false alarms off and on all the time. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to look like a bitch, but you swear to God you smell smoke. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to start the game?
Let's go.
Okay, fire alarm's going off. You're on the 18th floor. They're saying don't worry about it, but you swear to God you smell smoke. Do you get moving or do you stay put in the meeting?
I would assess if I smelled smoke or felt thing, I would probably start to understand and slowly start moving to where.
Well, all you got to worry about right now is get moving or stay in the meeting.
I would get moving.
Excellent. You should, because what the hell do a bunch of execs know about a fire in a 30-story building? So you're moving. That's plus 10 right off the bat.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Elevator, 20 feet away on the right. Stairs behind you about 100 feet. Heading to the elevator, heading to the stairs.
Stairs.
Absolutely, and why is that?
Because, the elevator, you get stuck in it. And
yeah, basically an elevator is a gigantic wind tunnel, which is perfect for the spread of fire. Now, a lot of the new buildings, if the alarm goes off, it will deactivate the elevators automatically. But the last thing you want to do is hop in a damn microwave, get stuck in it.
just like a fucking tornado of flames.
Yeah, it literally is just a wind tunnel that goes straight through the middle of these tall buildings.
What a
and so, wind. Yeah, imagine hopping in a microwave and turning it on 20 minutes. Last place you want to be, buddy. Plus 20, my friend. Excellent. Okay, so you're heading to the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in, you open the stairwell door. But before you get to the stairs, let's back up. Before you get to the stairs, do you continue moving towards that stairwell? You see it in front of you. Or do you stop and try and contact somebody on your cell phone? Head towards the stairwell or try to contact somebody on your phone?
Instinctually, I'd probably be trying to call somebody.
Excellent. And that you said the right word. Stick with your instincts on this. All right. The reason why is time is of the essence, obviously.
Yeah.
But you want to let somebody know, hey, I'm on the 18th floor right now and this is happening. So they know to look for you instead of, well, let's wait 6 or 8 hours and see if he shows up. Maybe he's out grabbing a beer.
Got it.
Speaking of beer, knock yourself out.
Cheers.
Cheers. Buddy, plus 30, my friend. You're doing great. Okay. You're in the stairwell. There is some smoke in the stairs. Do you head down or do you head up? You're on the 18th floor of a 30-story building. Smoke in the stairwell. Heading down or heading up?
Can I tell where the smoke's coming from or just heading down?
It's coming from below you.
Oh, below me. I head down.
You're heading down?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's why I would not recommend that. Fire and smoke rise. You know you have fire below you because the smoke is coming up. Oh. You do not want to walk down into the kill zone of a fire. You want to try and increase your distance. You've got some time and you've got some space by moving up. So my recommendation would be to move up and away from the threat.
So you go up and then find another.
Well, we're going to get there. But right now, the recommendation would be to move up away from the threat, away from the fire. Get off the X. I'm sure you're familiar with that by now, right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
I'm sorry, buddy, but that's a minus 10. That's all okay, though. You're doing great. Okay. You travel 3 floors up and get out of the stairwell onto that floor.
So I'm in 21.
Okay. So you're on floor 21.
Mm-hmm.
To the left is a bathroom.
Okay.
Or you can head towards the opposite stairwell. So you've got a bathroom to the left or head towards the other stairwell because all these buildings are required to have, at a minimum, 2 stairwells.
I would go to the other stairwell.
Okay. You're going to want to head that direction, but let me explain why I would recommend going to the bathroom. You realize that you're in a building that is on fire. You're going to want to wet your clothes. You're going to want to remove anything that might be made of synthetic cloth, which will end up melting.
Okay.
And you're going to want to get something to cover your mouth. So wet that. So since that bathroom is right there, I would highly recommend, hey, let's hit this. Let's go ahead, wet down, remove jewelry, anything that can burn you, and let's get something over the face. All right.
So in that situation, would you then say you didn't have anything for like a mask, so to speak, and this is obviously pre-COVID, everybody has masks.
Yeah,
but say like you have a t-shirt, so you take your t-shirt off and use that.
Yes. Anything that is not flammable or synthetic material.
Yeah.
Okay. You can use that, wet it and cover your face with it. And then again, if you have some kind of poly shirt on or something like that, it's going to melt.
Yeah.
Man, you got to get rid of that and try and get something else. You don't want bare skin, but having like a polyester shirt on, I don't think anybody wears those anymore. That's going to be a bad deal. It's just going to turn into plastic.
Okay.
All right. So hang in there. You're at plus 10 still. Okay. So you've gone, you've wetted everything down. You have face covering. Good to go. You leave the bathroom and you can run to the opposite stairs. Or you can crawl to the opposite stairwell. You're going to run or you're going to crawl? You're starting to see some smoke on the floor you're on.
I crawl.
Excellent. Okay. And the reason you crawl is most fire-related deaths, AJ, are from smoke and toxic fume inhalation. All right?
Okay.
That's how most people don't die from burning. They die from inhaling that stuff and they pass out.
And they don't realize they're doing it.
Yeah. So even though you do have something to cover your mouth, if you're running, obviously your lungs are going to be working twice as hard. You're going to be ingesting twice as much. If you're crawling, you're below the smoke, but you're still heading toward that stairwell. All right. So excellent. You are back in the plus column. All right. You're heading towards that stairwell. Unfortunately, in the hallway, your path is blocked. There are flames in front of you. Okay, so you decide to enter an office space. So you enter this office space to get away from that, that flames that was in that hallway. Are you going to try and signal out a window to let somebody know and stay put in that office space? Or are you going to try and break through the wall, drywall, to try and get through to the next office space, creating more distance? Stop and signal, stay put.
I would keep moving, get through the wall.
Absolutely, you want to keep moving, all right?
Is that just like banging, grab whatever you can? Just
yeah, so here's a cool thing about interior construction. They've got maybe aluminum vertical braces that are maybe 18 to 24 inches. I'm not sure what the code is, but it's just going to be thin drywall. You could take an office chair and bust right through that. So instead of going down that hallway that was obstructed, you go in an office, and now you're creating a new hallway by going through those, all right? So you said it. I want to keep moving. You've got to keep moving. Yeah. Okay, you can do one of two things. You can sit, wait, and die, or you can fight for your life. I know which one you're going to do. I know which one I'm going to do.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Here we go. A few more, buddy. You're plus 30 again. Right. Okay, you get to the other set of stairs.
Yeah.
There's also smoke in those. Are you going to try and head down or continue to head up? You are on the 21st floor of a 30-story building.
And smoke is coming up.
Smoke is coming up, kind of like the first time. So both stairwells are compromised.
I feel like I would go down. Is that bad?
Why did you not want to go down on the other stairwell? Source of the danger? The X?
I don't know. I just feel like, because I know if I go up there and it's burning and I'm trapped and then...
The fire... Okay, let me help you out. You definitely know the fire is below you.
Okay.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's taking over the whole floor. It's coming up. So I'd go to the roof then.
Absolutely. Keep heading up. You're getting distance away, time and distance away from the danger zone. And right now,
In that sense, then that allows the time for the first responders then to...
In this situation, AJ, you are buying time by creating distance.
Distance. Okay.
Yeah. So you're buying time right now by creating distance. It's going to be like, all right, so yes, you said it. I'm going to head to the roof on a big building like this. What do you think's going to be on the roof? Probably a helicopter pad, or at least the ability for somebody to come in on that. So you are
and air.
Yep, exactly. Air. And fresh air. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So you have made it to the roof. Congratulations. You got some fresh air. You're looking over the side of the building. You see on one side of the building, you're seeing flames coming out and you're like, okay, this thing's coming up. What you're not seeing is there are no helicopters in the area. And you're thinking, all right, I don't know how much time I have here, but are you going to stay there, wait for a rescue, preferably from a helicopter, or you see on the opposite side of the building that has the flames, there is a window washing crane there. It's a platform and it's used to wash windows. It goes up and down. I think you know what I'm trying to describe right now.
Yeah.
All right. So you can wait for a rescue or you can proceed over and take your chances by lowering yourself on the window washing platform.
Holy fuck. That's a tough one.
It is, but look at your situation. You're already eating a shit sandwich. So what do you think you want to do here? Let me help you out. You waited 20 minutes. Nothing. No helicopters.
Okay. I would probably get on the fucking thing and head down.
Yes. Not ideal, but right back to the, I can sit, wait, and die or fight for my life.
Yeah. I saw no helicopters. If I just got up there, I'd probably wait a couple minutes and see. And if I'd see anything and I felt like it was getting hotter and the smoke was getting worse, I would say, fuck it. And I would jump on the fucking.
Yeah. I mean, your stories tragically about people who basically said in the Twin Towers, I'm going to burn alive or I'm going to jump.
Yeah.
And if I'm in that situation, I might as well have one more free fall or as we call it, a hey, no high altitude, no parachute. All right, buddy. Here's your last one. You're at plus 50 points right now. You're doing great. This one's tough. You are cruising down the side of the building. You're doing great. You look up above you from where you came, and now you see flames that are coming out above you and they're going past the cables of your trolley. So you got to do one of two things for your final decision. Are you going to hope that the cables will resist the heat long enough for you to get down to the base of the building?
Yeah.
Or are you going to stop, bust out a window that is below the fire and try and go back into the building again, below the fire and get out that way.
I'd go back in the building.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have no idea how long this cable's going to last. After everything you've been through, it would really suck to die from falling like 100 feet off this thing. Yeah. So you know you're below the fire. You get back in. You proceed down. Yeah. And congratulations, AJ Buckley. You survived this podcast, my friend, with plus 60 points, which is very solid.
Hey, so in any of those situations with a fire, if you're it's about creating distance, right? Distance and...
And especially in a situation like that where you're hoping first responders will help, it's creating time. So it's increasing your distance from the source of the danger. Yep. And you can apply this to a lot of things, not just fire, but you're also buying yourself time.
Yeah.
So that others might be able to help you out.
And then with the smoke, then being aware, staying low, and so you're not...
Yeah, because just remember, most people in a fire situation die from inhalation, not from burning.
They just become delirious and they don't know what's happening.
You just pass out. Yeah, you just pass out and that's it. And so you might be dead for several minutes before you even get burned.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, stay low. But you did awesome. You did great. Okay, AJ, I know that you, in addition to your amazing acting, you are also an entrepreneur. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on with Paperclip.
I started a diaper bag company about, 5-6 years ago. You see, my daughter's six, so 6 years ago. I had taken my daughter out to her very, I was like, going to introduce her to my friends, and we're going to watch football. It was like the Pink Taco on Hollywood Boulevard.
Sure.
Or on Sunset Boulevard. And I'd shown up, and as I had taken her out of the car, she had like, I call it the magical poop. For some reason, it was like she pooped, but it like gone up her back. It was like in her like hair. I'm like, how do you shit? And it fucking touches your head. Like she had a little mullet.
And you asked me why I don't look 50. That's a prime example right there.
And I was like, what? And I'm like, it's my very first time. I'm like, oh my God. So my friends are like, hey, and I'm like, hey, my daughter. So I like go into the bathroom, and when I walked into the bathroom, there was no changing tables in the men's bathroom. And I was like, well, this is weird. And then I go out to the manager. I'm like, is there a change table? He's like, yeah, it's just in the girls' bathroom. And I'm like, okay, well, I got it. He's like, oh, sorry, buddy. And then I, as a dad, being a little absent-minded, at the baby shower, we got like a mat that you're supposed to put inside the diaper bag. But of course, I didn't fucking put the mat in. I forgot the mat. So basically, I had to take my shirt off, and I laid it down in front of the bag. And then the bag was there, and I was changing my daughter on this like disgusting floor of the Pink Taco on Sunset Boulevard. And I had this like, it's like, I'm like, this is my first time ever taking my daughter out. I'm literally shirtless fucking. And I'm like so already bummed that I fucked up. And then as I'm shooting, I'm like, I had this idea. I'm like, what happens if you had a diaper bag that had this fold out thing? You never had to worry about a change. It was built in. There's no change tables in men's bathrooms. And I had this epiphany like right there. And I got home, and my buddy Artie Baxter, he's good friends with Keegan, he had randomly called me. He was expecting, I'm like, dude, I'm like, it's a diaper bag, and there's a change station, and I'm like, buddy, he's like, what? He's like, have you been drinking? I'm like, 100% I have, 100%, and I'm drawing pictures of it, and he came over and looked at it. He's like, I don't know, like, I can barely draw a stick, man. It was like scribbles. He was like, you know, he's like, I have no idea, but I explained to him, and I'm like, dude, you understand it when you have a kid, and they've got to go to the bathroom. And then I started looking at diaper bags that, the way that they were designed, like, you know how like your wife or your girlfriend, they can like have a huge purse and they can reach in and they just know where their lipstick is. They know, they know where it is. Okay. I don't know how the fuck you do that. Especially when you're a fucking kid that's screaming and then you like reach in, you're like looking for anything. So then we decided to like, the way we're going to design this bag was almost like a toolbox. So like when you unzip it, everything folds out. So you see everything in front of you. So it like opens up this way. So you call it your toolbox. As the table folds out this way, you see everything in front of you. And it sort of evolved, and we went through like 12 different prototypes. I flew to China, and like I was in between shows right now. And basically I had taken my savings, all of my savings with Artie, and we doubled down, and my wife thought I was crazy. I'm like, we're going to make diaper bags. And she's like, you've lost your mind. Like, this is crazy. Like you are, and Artie said the same thing. And we went to the ABC Kids show in Las Vegas, which is the biggest like baby product thing, and they came by and like gave us like a day two, gave us like a blue ribbon. I'm like, what's this? They're like, you won the mommy blog, you won the innovation of 2017. I was like, what? We didn't even know how to write orders. We didn't know how to fucking do anything. And people were coming up, we're like, what the fuck? Well, we had no clue. And all of a sudden, it became what it is now. And
it's called Paperclip, right?
Yeah, it's called Paperclip. The thing about it too is, like, although it was designed by dads, 85% of our customers are women, and they basically, we wanted to have a diaper bag that the dad felt comfortable carrying. Mm. Because there's nothing worse when you see like a dad that's just got like a fucking flower print fucking diaper bag, and he just is hating life. And the way that it looks, it, like, every one of the, our diaper bags is named after one of our kids. Like, we have the Bear, the Willow, the Ranger, the Bodie, with the Wolf, which is like a fanny pack, the Wolf pack. In the last year, we probably had our biggest year of the company this past year, even with COVID and everything. We cannot keep these on the shelf. We're in Nordstrom's, Target. We're everywhere right now. And it's a blessing, man. I never in a million years thought I'd be playing a Navy SEAL on TV and selling diaper bags on the side.
Do you realize what you did there, though? What we were talking about earlier? You solved the problem and you never quit.
Yeah.
And now you've got an amazing, successful company. Hey, man, we do something on the show here to wrap things up. We call it After Action Report, AAR. What did you learn today, if anything?
You're a fucking good dude, number one.
I appreciate that.
And I'm really grateful to be on this. But no, it's especially with this fucking crazy world we live in. And I find myself, too, taking those deep breaths. I mean, like, everybody just needs to take a deep fucking breath. Amen. Everybody's going to chill the fuck out. Just take a deep breath. We're going to get through this. We'll assess, adapt, overcome. We will get through this. Just take a deep breath. And the sun will rise tomorrow. And we will get through this.
Dude. That's as good as it gets right there. AJ Buckley, I cannot thank you enough for your time.
Yeah, man.
And look, prayers to your family.
Yeah,
we hope everything works out, but thank you so much for your time. Hey, folks, the best way to support our show is to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. You can also check out our YouTube channel for video content of all of our episodes. So ring that bell to subscribe. And if you have any survival questions you want answered, just leave it in the comments so you can be a survivor, not a statistic. Thank you again, AJ Buckley. Folks, this is Cade out. Can You Survive This Podcast is a Cavalry Audio production recorded live from The Bunker in Denver, Colorado. Hosted by me, Cade Courtley. Produced by Brandon Morgan and Cade Courtley. Associate producer is Jeff Apple. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti.